Welcome to Headlines. This is Ari Wasserman sitting in for David Lichtenstein. Today we are going to talk about the topic of buying and selling of schar mitzvahs and the buying and selling of a chelik in Olam Haba. What does that mean? So for example, if somebody indeed wants to bolster up the schar he has from mitzvahs, or he wants to buy somebody else's chelik in Olam Haba or a portion thereof, is that possible? Is that a doable transaction or is that not a doable transaction? Buying and selling of schar mitzvahs, or also if somebody has certain averas and he doesn't feel he's able to do tshuva on those averas, can he pay someone to take those averas from him? Does that work or does that not work? So in fact, in Parshas Ki Tisa, we saw, unfortunately, the Chet HaEgel of Klal Yisrael, or portions of Klal Yisrael, and Moshe Rabbeinu negotiates for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to forgive Klal Yisrael from this terrible Avera. And at a certain point, we're now in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Lamed Beis, Moshe Rabbeinu says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vata im tisach hatasam, vim ayin, the famous Pasuk, the famous statement, vim ayin mecheni na Moshe Rabbeinu beseeches a Kaddish Baruch Hu and says, Kaddish Baruch Hu, please forgive their sin, but if not, I want to be erased from the Sefer Torah. And in fact, the Kli Yakar says, what's going on here? Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, either way, it looks like I should be erased from the Sefer Torah, because if you're going to be mochel them, I'm begging you to be mochel them, and they need kapara, I will be their kapara. I will be the kapara for Klal Yisrael. But if a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you don't want to forgive them, in that sense, I want to be erased anyway. So either way, says the Kli Yakar, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be erased. He's saying, I'm going to be erased. But on the first part of that, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you can please forgive them, erase the sin, they need a kapara, I will be their kapara. We see that Moshe Rabbeinu indeed was willing to be the kapara, to take the sins of Klal Yisrael. So in fact, that would lend credence to the argument that you can buy, sell mitzvahs, you can indeed take the averas from somebody else. But nonetheless, there's a tshuva written by Rabbi Chaim Sofer. He was a Rav, he was a posek in the 1800s in Hungary, and indeed he discusses our very issue. Can you buy, can you sell in mitzvahs? Can you pay somebody to take averas from you? And he says that that does not work. And he brings a medrash based on the pasuk, Achovev Amim Kol Kedushah B'Yadech. He says this is talking about Parnasa Yisrael, the leaders of Klal Yisrael, that they are moser nefesh tremendously for Klal Yisrael. And he brings a couple of examples. One of them, the primary one, Moshe Rabbeinu, quoting our pasuk, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please forgive Klal Yisrael, forgive their sins, and if not, Mecheni Nami Sifra Chasher Kasafta, erase me from your Sefer Torah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings the Machane Chaim. He says as follows, that the Medrash HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers to Moshe Rabbeinu, Mi Asher Chata Li Emchenu Misifri, the person who sinned, those who are the sinners, I'm going to erase them. However, those who did not sin will not be punished for those who did sin. And in fact, he goes on to say that had this transaction, taking somebody's averas from him, if that would be effective, Moshe Rabbeinu, he was Moshe Nefesh 100% for Klal Yisrael, he would have said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just transfer me their averas, I'll take it from them. And the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu did not say it proves that you cannot transfer averas from somebody else. Whoever did an avera, they're responsible for the avera. Whoever did a mitzvah keeps the credit for that mitzvah. That cannot be sold or transferred to somebody else. So in fact, this is going to be the discussion on the show. This has happened a number of times in history. We will hear the story from Rav David Lichtenstein himself of when he bought the schar mitzvah of the birthright mitzvah, the birthright trip that Michael Steinhardt founded, a co-founder of the birthright trip, bringing literally tens of thousands, now at this point, hundreds of thousands of Jews, primarily unaffiliated to the land of Israel. So David Lichtenstein bought that mitzvah from Michael Steinhardt. So is that effective or is that going to be not effective? So that has happened. Then we'll hear about a maisa that happened in Chicago as well. And indeed, somebody told me another story that there were a couple brothers that were in Canada somewhere, and they were wealthy, but they had a very difficult time in business at a certain point. And they went and they sold 10% of their Olam Haba, 10%, each of them, 10% of their Olam Haba to somebody who had gone through the Holocaust, but he was an unaffiliated Jew at that point. And he is the one who bought their schar in Olam Haba. So we will, Amir Tashem, be talking about all of these situations. Is it possible to buy, to sell, Schara Mitzvahs, a Chelik in Olam Haba, and the like? So joining us on today's show, we will, as mentioned, initially hear from Reb David Lichtenstein, about his purchase from Michael Steinhardt of the Birthright Mitzvah, or of Michael Steinhardt's Chelik in Olam Haba. We will then go on to speak with Rabbi Manis Friedman, the famed author, the speaker, the Chabad Shaliach, and we will talk about when somebody else does a mitzvah, but you enable it, like Birthright, Michael Steinhardt enabling, and others, those funders for Birthright, when they enable those youths to come, to visit the land of Israel, to learn in the land of Israel, can you get the schar of a mitzvah for somebody else doing a mitzvah? Just, I do want to mention that was quite an interesting and extensive interview with Rabbi Friedman. It was too long to include all of it in the show. So the entire interview is located in the Mekoros. If you go to the website in the Mekoros, there is a link there to get to the entire interview. We are then going to go and speak with Rabbi Avi Wiesenfeld. He is the Rosh Yeshiva of Beis David. He's a posek. He's a Rav involved in a Beis Horah. He's the posek of a Beis Horah. And in fact, he's going to walk us through the entire sugya, buying and selling of mitzvahs in the postgame. And at the end, we're going to hear from Rabbi Zalman Graus, who is a Ton Beis Din, a very well-known Ton Beis Din in the United States. And my questions to him are, if somebody came to you and wanted to rescind a deal, somebody who sold mitzvahs or bought mitzvahs and he wants to get out of the deal, how would you look at that as a Toin Beis Din from a Choshen Mishpat perspective? And at the way end of the show, we will hear from the Dayan, the head of the Beis Din of the CRC, the Chicago Rabbinical Council, Rabbi Yonah Ries. He has had a situation like we were talking about on this show, and he will also walk us through, as a Dayan, as the head of the Beis Din, how would he paskin such a shaila? So before we get to the guests on the show, we will first go through the riddle of the week. The riddle of the week, we're actually not going to take it from this week's Parsha. We're going to go back to Parsha's Truma. It should be hopefully a simple question and a simple answer. And the question is as follows. Where do we have a Pasuk in Parsha's Truma that in that Pasuk we have a reference, we have a remez to all of the days of the year that we have Kriyas HaTorah? So again, going back to Parsha's Truma, where do we have a remez and a Pasuk that all of the days of the week throughout the year that we lane are in fact referenced in that pasuk?
Rabbi, what are your thoughts? 732-806-8700, press number 2. That's for what the B'nai HaYeshiva have to say. Or info@headlinesbook.com. We will post both messages, voicemails, as well as written, unless you request otherwise. But we're interested in what the Olam has to say.
A word from our sponsor. A few weeks ago, we started DAF Headlines, and you could get it either at dafheadlines.com, you could go to the OU and get it on all our DAF. If you go to dafheadlines.com, you could get it either by WhatsApp, or by email, or text, or there's a phone line, there's information how to dial in. And what is it? It's 5 minutes every day on the DAF, a halacha that would interest you. We speak about what Reb Shlomo Zalman said to the younger man who wanted to buy a very expensive esrig, but he didn't buy his wife yet a dress for Yom Tov. The din of Simchas Yom Tov Bizman Hazeh, living on top of a shul. The Taz says his child died because of that. Should we be makbid Bizman Hazeh? Can a katan do malacha for you on Shabbos, carry my siddur to shul? Or like the story of Reb Chaim, he started screaming, Man Yanuach Bincha, it's Issa Daraisa. Do we hold like that? What about Korban Pesach Bizman Hazeh? You have every year somebody takes a sheep and they run up to the mount. Well, can you or can't you? Do we do it? Do we not do it for political reason? From kite, you know, maybe you'll step in the wrong. What do we say? Tumah Hitra B'tzibur, and you should be able to do it. And then after the halach of every day, we say something on the parsha, something chizuk. We say some divrei Elokim Chaim. I think you'll find it really enjoyable. In a short period, it's picked up quite a bit of listenership. If you've been listening for the last year, year and a half, you'll be happy to know that Headlines 3 is coming out with many of the topics that we discussed, debated, argued about, agreed and disagreed about, with comments from the Rabbanim who took part of it. After every piece, we print the Maror HaMikdash and what the Rabbanim said, their opinions on the topic. I think you'll find it interesting and really usable by the Shabbos table. You know, you want to get everybody into it. You just don't want to talk about Trump anymore. You'll be able to talk Divrei Elokim Chaim with the Maror HaMikdash. You'll agree or disagree. It's coming out Purim time, maybe a week after Purim. We only printed 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 of them. They'll go quickly, so I urge you to go get one. As always, if you'd like to send in a comment, 732-806-8700, and for comments, it's 2. Or you can email us, info@headlinesbook.com. We do put up the comments and the letters online, where readers or listeners can access them, unless you request otherwise.
Typically, when a guest joins us, I say, joining us now, but I feel a little bit uncomfortable saying, joining us now is David Lichtenstein, because I'm not sure that I should be saying that joining us now is David Lichtenstein, or David Lichtenstein should be saying, joining us now is Ari Wasserman. But in any case, David, it is great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ari.
So, Reb David, I heard a story. Actually, I think you told it on the air as well, but I wanted to get a little bit more information. It actually inspired this entire show is your purchase from Michael Steinhardt of a mitzvah or a chelik in Olam Haba relating to birthright. So if you could tell us what happened leading up to that purchase of that chelik in Olam Haba or his mitzvahs, I'm fascinated to hear about it because we're going to go through this sugya on this show to figure out if you actually have a valid sale or not.
So it was, my son was, and daughter were both in Eretz Yisrael. My daughter was in seminary. My son was in the Mir. And I was staying at the King David. And it was late at night. It must have been 11:30 or so. And I see Michael Steinhardt there. And he's sort of a little unmistakable. He has like a big handlebar mustache. And I had heard that he was sometimes an atheist, sometimes not. On the other hand, he was one of the biggest, you know, Marbitze Torah, or biggest Makarvim in the world through
birthright.
Birthright. So I figured I would have a little fun. So I went over to him and I said, you know, when it's late at night in Eretz Yisrael, and I was a bacher in Eretz Yisrael for I don't know, at least 5 years. So you sort of you get back into a little bit like what you were like in school there. So I went over to him and I said, "Oh, Mister Steiner, it's such an honor to meet you." Turns around and says, "Do I know you?" I said, "No, but I want to tell you that I envy your share in the world to come." He looks at me and he says, "Well, that's very interesting because I don't believe in Olam Haba. I don't believe in the world to come." So I said, "Oh, so I have a deal for you. You're a hedge fund manager. It means you arbitrage. You're always looking to make a dollar. You think it's worth nothing. I think it's worth something. How about I would give you right now $100,000, I'll write out a check to you, $100,000 for the mitzvah of birthright and its share in the world to come." I actually said for your share in the world to come.
So it's for the mitzvah, or if it's for his share in the world to come, or is it for both? They kind of go together.
I actually said your share in the world to come, but I'll get to that. So he looked at me and he said, "You serious?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Hey," I took out a checkbook, wrote a check for $100,000 to him. He said, "Okay." So I was carrying on me some papers, and I said, "Here, let's write it down. Why don't you write it?" So he actually wrote, "I, Michael Steinhardt, sell the mitzvah of taglit." I didn't know what's called taglit. "And it's sheer in the world to come to David Lichtenstein for $100,000. He signed it, Michael Steinhardt. And I still have the paper. And I gave him the check. He gave me the paper. And that was the end. I said goodbye. The next morning, he sees me. And he comes over to me, he says, "You know, you could change." Oh, so that night I went upstairs. It was 12 o'clock already, which means it was 7 in the morning. My wife gets up early. So I called her up. I said, "I just did a little bit of a crazy thing. Like, am I going to regret it?" So she says, "Trust me, long after you forgot about it, he's going to remember it." So next morning he comes over to me and he says, "You could still change your mind." I said, "You know, Mr. Steinhardt, I think I got a very good bargain. And, you know, I would have offered you, if you had asked for $1 million or $2 million, I would have offered you that too." So he's like, face, like he's, you know, so he said, "I'm like, why did you buy that? What inspired you?" So I said, "It was actually a story my father told me when I was a boy." He said that there was a person, he had a bunch of daughters to marry off. And he didn't have any money and he was getting older and older. They were getting older. So his wife kept on nagging him, "Go to the Tzaddik of Lublin and ask him for a bracha." So next birthday, he said, okay, his wife nagging him, you know what that could do. Any spouse Nigs, the other one. He says, okay. See, he put on a pair of shoes and he trudged. It took him 3 weeks to get to Lublin. He got some hitches along the way, comes to Lublin. He's waiting a line. He sees the Kaiser and he starts crying. He tells them, my daughters are getting old. I don't have a dowry. I have nothing to give them. I can't pay for a talus. Forget about a wedding. So the Kaiser closes his holy eyes and he thinks, and he puts his hand in his silk waistband that they have, you know, and he pulls out a ruble and he flips it to the guy like this. And he says, here. So the guy looks at the ruble. He says, Rebbe, you're making a joke of me. I need 20,000 ruble, not one ruble. So the Chayza said, the first business deal that comes your way, do it. He said, okay. On the way back, he was very depressed. So he stopped by a kretchmer. He figured a few good drinks won't hurt anybody. So he's drinking over there in the kretchmer, making a bilachayim. And a few wealthy OTD, we'll call them, you know, shababniks come in. Well, you know, and they see like a Heimish little yiddler sitting there. So they go over to him. They say, oh, what brings you into our bar? He says, you know, I was coming back and I went to the Rebbe and he said, I should do business. So they said, what type of business? He said, the Rebbe said the first business. So they were all wealthy. One of them said to him, how much do you have? Well, we're interested. He said, I have one ruble. And they burst into laughter. One ruble is like saying I have a dollar. So the richest one of them said, you know what? There's only one thing. I have estates, I have factories, I have businesses, I have boats. One thing that I have that's worth a ruble. What's that? My share in the world to come. And he started laughing. His chassid says, the Rebbe said the first deal. He said, okay. So he gave him the ruble, took out his shtar, they wrote down, he took the shtar back, and the guy went home. And this little yiddler was already late at night. He wrapped himself in his coat and he went to sleep next to the fireplace. This guy goes home. He tells his wife, he says, Lucy, whatever the name is for Shababnik in white Russian those days. He says, want to hear a funny story? He says, what? I just sold my Elam Haba for a ruble. Imagine I made a ruble off this poor guy. So it seems she wasn't as far gone as he did. So she said, you sold your share in the world to come? My husband doesn't have a chiluk Elam Haba. I can't be married to you. Go buy it back. So he goes back, wakes him up. He says, you know the thing for a ruble? I'll give you 10 ruble. You make a 10,000% profit in an hour. Looks at him, remembers, he says, I'm sorry. He says, I'll give you 20 ruble. I'll give you 100 ruble. I'll give you 500 bucks, 500 ruble. Guy says, no. He says, okay, forget it. Goes back home. Well, his wife, I tried. I said, what do you mean you tried? Do you have it or don't you have it? You said you signed a note. Can I see the note? He says, well, the guy didn't agree to 500. He says, I don't care. You're not, get out of the house until he goes out, goes back. He says, listen, I'll give you 1,000. I'll give you 5,000 ruble, fortune. Guy says, no, goes back home. This time his suitcase is up outside by the door over there ready. You know what I mean? His boots are outside. She's moving him. He says, I'm not living with a person without Elam Haba. Seems the money may have come from her side of the family. The guy got scared. He went back, said, I'll give you 10,000. How much? 20,000. That's what the Rebbe said. So he gave him back the shtar. He gave him 20,000. This guy went on his way, married off his daughters. This guy went home. His wife hopefully took him back. End of story. A year later, his wife says to him, you know, maybe 2 years later, everybody goes to the tzaddik with tzaras. Nobody ever goes to tell him things worked out. You should go back. So this time he has already a coach with 4 horses. He goes back, waits a line, goes into the chayza. He tells him the story. And the chayza smiles and he says, when you sold it to him for a ruble, right? It was a nah. He was ripping you off. Wasn't worth a farthing. Wasn't worth a penny. But when he bought it back for ruble, then he was a nah, because then it was worth so, so much more than the 20,000. I said that story. I said, that's what inspired me to buy it. But in, right. So he, you know, that was the end of it. And actually, a few years later, he came back to me. He met me someplace with his wife. And his wife came running over. She says, you bought the Elam Haba from him? His here. I said, yeah. And she said, and you gave him a check? Is it true? I said, yeah, I gave him a check for 100 grand. You deposited it. And that was it. And then I had around 4 or 5 years ago, what's his name, from ADP, I forgot his name, Howard Jonas, called me up.
ADP.
He says, I want to buy it back from him. I said, listen, Michael Steinhardt knows my number. If he wants to buy it back, he can call me.
I was going to ask you if Steinhardt's wife told him to go buy it back, but I guess she didn't. She didn't know. Okay, very good. So the purchase was for the mitzvah of birthright and all the good that it's done. Was it mikanu lehaba or also going backwards? Because that's going to be important for our halachic analysis.
The note just says, I sell you the mitzvah of birthright and it's sheer in the world to come for $100,000. It doesn't say that.
That's the note. Now, I will tell everyone listening that I actually received a copy of the check about 10 years ago. I have a copy of the check, and it's made out Michael Steinhardt. This was June 2nd, 2008. And in the memo, it says for birthright mitzvah. It says for birthright mitzvah. And I also have, it was cashed at the back of the check as well. And what's interesting is that Michael Steinhardt, he did sign it over to Birthright Foundation. So it says pay to the order of Birthright Foundation, to his credit. He didn't pocket it personally, but he paid it over, but he sold his chelik in Olam Haba. So let me ask you, this show is about, is this an effective transaction? If it turns out as we go through this sugya that it is a mekach taus, you can't buy somebody's char mitzvah, somebody's chelik in Olam Haba, would you ask for the money back from Michael Steinhardt?
I don't think Michael Steinhardt, claiming to be quote unquote an atheist, is interested in the halacha. So a lot of times, you know, when I personally don't learn that way, but like you'll see how some Litvaks learn Chumash. Esav held like the Maram Shif. Yankiv held like the Marsha. Machlekes was, is it? Esav held like the Maram Shif. So this guy's not interested in what, I know it's Machlekes Shulte Gibayrim and other Rishonim actually. He's not interested in what the Shulte Gibayrim has to say. He said, look, this was the deal, I'll go and tug. And since we practice business really under the auspices of the countries where we live, right, it's already brought in the Paiskim. There's many Paiskim, the Shari Mishpat and the Nesiva says, the kind of, what's the Minik HaSeichrim? I think even Lahalachi, you'd have a hard time getting it back.
So on the flip side, if it turns out that it's a valid sale and Michael Steinhardt comes to you, he has Charata, would you sell him back his Chelik and Olam Hava?
The answer is yes, but I would probably make a condition or two. You know, there was a story. There was a Yid in Lodz who became an apikiris. And he was very proud. He was like the biggest apikiris in Lodz. So somebody once told him, you're the biggest apikiris in Lodz. Lodz is not such a big city. It actually is, but the Varsha has a guy, Mechel. He's the head of all the apikirisim in Poland. He decided he wants to go see him. So he goes to Warsaw. He treks from Lodz to Warsaw. It's not that far, but in those days, it could have been 2 weeks. And he hears Mechel, the famous apikiris. Where is he? In that neighborhood. He goes to name. Where's Mechel apikiris? That's a block. Where is he? Oh, he goes to the house. Mechel, yeah. Where, he's in the Beis Medrash. Where's the Beis Medrash? Two blocks away. He goes. He's to the Beis Medrash. He walks inside. There's people learning. And there's one guy very seriously learning with a big pile of svarim in front of him. And a lang of ice, you know. He says, who's Mechel? The guy with the big pile of svarim. So he goes over. He says, you're Mechel? He says, yeah. And he says to him, I heard you're the chief apikiris in Varsha. He says, yeah. He says, so what are you sitting with all the svarim for? He says, what do you mean? If you're an apikiris, you have to know what you're an apikiris in. You can't be an amoritz. I'm an amoritz. You can't be an they don't know anything. And I was speaking to a guy recently from a big university. I don't want to say his name because I don't want to be Malm Nechaveri. And he's wrote a book called All the Mistakes That God Made Using Midrashim. So he called me up. Do I want a copy of the book? So I said to him, like, give me an example. So he gave me an example, or Levana, and Bainshom, hey, view like a parish, and me after the Salvana. I said, do you understand the issue that the Gemara is grappling with? I said, you know, the Chama is Makabal, it gives the Levana, even when they were the same size. So very often, and it's called in Kabbalah, Kaitz Benetzius, you see this in China, when you have a grandfather, he had one son, oh, that's all you were allowed to have, who has children, and he gets into a fight with the son. So the son says, you know what? You'll never see your Reinikel again in your life. It's the only heritage that he has. So who owns who? So this is you know, the debate with Kaviyachal, Ein Melech B'liyam. So the Christians, Taka said, Isay Ish becomes the king. Why? Because we tell God, we're in control. We're the Reinikel. You can't, you know, you need, so that's the Bachloik. He says, David, you're making it so complicated. It's much more simplistic than that. So I said to him, you know, I want to tell you something. There were two Yidden in the mikveh. You know what the mikveh says? Sure, I know them. He says, one was saying to the other, I could explain to you the theory of relativity from Einstein. He says, what? Really? You can? I want to hear. He says, it's very simple, the theory of relativity. When it's on in Yiddelach, right? If you find two hairs in your soup, that's a lot of hair. If you have only two hairs on your head, that's not a lot of hair. That's the theory of relativity from Einstein. Why did he win for that a Nobel Prize? So I said, if that's how you understand Einstein, that's how you understand the Gemara. What I have in Machlokes with you, I get, that's Einstein, that's the Gemara, it's all good. But if you understand that the Gemara were Chachamim 100 times Einstein, you understand you have to take this seriously, right? So he tells me, no, he has a Rebbe in the university that won a prize from some Epsapikursish organization, from Reform organization, and he taught him. I said, He's in Amaretz. He's garnished. I don't care. Did he ever learn in a yeshiva? No. I said, let's get him on the phone. I'll ask him a very simple shayla. I said, you're the expert. Tell me, how many mesechtes are there in Shas? How many could you name? Well, you don't even know names in a mesechtes. This is your, yeah. He says, how could an Amaretz say pshat in a medrash?
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. I guess one thing talking about Api Korsim we'll have to grapple with also is if Api Korsim, there's a in Perek HaChelek, Ve'ilu She'enlem Chelek Lo'olam Haba. So we have Omer Ein Tchias Amesi Mina Torah, Ein Torah Mina Shamayim and Api Koris. So we'll have to figure that out also.
The Rambam in Mamrim, I believe it's Perek Beis, Halacha Gimel. It could be off, it could be Perek Gimel. He says something that's really important. And it precedes the Chazon Ish. He says, if the first generation of Apikursim or Apikursim, but the next generation or the third generation, Michael Stern believes his father was a wonderful Jew. He wasn't Shemesh Shabbos. He supported Israel. And he looks up to his father as his hero. So the Rambam says that's not an Apikurus anymore.
That would be a Tinok Shanish by then.
Yeah, and Rambam says it. He says this 800-900 years ago, right? So I believe really Michael Stern is an incredibly special person. And I think he does have a big chelik ilah. He's done amazing things for Kol Yisrael, really one of a type things. And the real reason I did this is it's like sort of like nobody really pays attention to their thumb. How many people pay attention to their thumb? Maybe when they cut the nail, take away a person's thumb, see how much he suddenly pays attention to his thumb. So like chelik ilah haba, it's a joke. You know, it's suddenly you're missing it and you start really thinking. And he gave a speech. I didn't say over the story to anybody, but then he started talking about it. And I actually got the transcript of where he spoke about it. And the way he says it over is entirely different. He says the story, and he says, and I gave it to him because Jews believe we don't work for reward. And then he quotes the Mishva. Alti Avadim, he quotes it. He said, so the purest service of God is giving away my reward.
That just increased your schar that you bought by dramatically.
So, in other words, it made the point. When you're missing it, suddenly you recognize, I don't have a chelok, I don't have a, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
David. So I just want to say that somebody came, there was once in, I heard this from my father's story, a guy came to the Chafetz Chaim, and he was a very secular Jew in Russia, which there were many, but he did a lot of tivus for the Jewish people. And he came to the Chafetz Chaim, he was curious. Chafetz Chaim heard who he was and what he did. He saw he was crying. Chafetz Chaim took his hand. Chafetz Chaim started crying. So the guy said, why are you crying? He said, I'm crying because how could a hand that did so much tivus for the Klal Yisrael, how could it go to Gehenna? That's why I'm crying. So, you know, when I looked at Michael Stein and said, this is a person who's done so much for Klal Yisrael, just endless. I said, how do we get him to recognize? I said, you know what? This is the way to do it. And hopefully it'll work.
Well, I hope Michael listens to the show. Anyone out there who knows Michael Steinhardt, please send him a link to the show. And I'm waiting to hear how big the offer is from Michael to repurchase that chelek. David, thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you.
Call Zavari. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Joining us now is Rabbi Manis Friedman. Rabbi Friedman is a known author, a popular speaker, a Chabad Shaliach, and also the founder and dean of a crash course for women about Judaism, the fundamentals of Judaism. 30,000 women have attended over the decades. Rabbi Friedman, terrific having you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ari.
So, Rabbi Friedman, let me frame the conversation. It may take me a minute or two, but I think it's important because this is towards the beginning of the show. We are talking about, is it possible to buy or sell schar in mitzvahs or olam haba? Obviously, a very important thing. Can I outsource the doing of my mitzvahs? And fundamentally, there are two questions that we need to grapple with here. The first one is, if somebody wants to outsources mitzvahs. He enables somebody else to do mitzvahs, but he's not doing the mitzvahs. He's enabling somebody else to do mitzvahs. Does he get schar for that? And the second part of the question that we can touch on here, but this is going to be covered in the balance of the show, is once we establish somebody has a mitzvah, is that transferable or is that not transferable? So just to give an example, somebody buying, selling schar and mitzvah, schar and olam haba, and our example can be birthright. Birthright, an amazing opportunity for young youths to come to the land of Israel. And I'm going to read from their website some of the statistics. They have brought 750,000 young youths mostly unaffiliated to Judaism, Jewish but unaffiliated, from 68 countries over the years. Their budget, and they raise this, is $175 million a year. They bring 50,000 participants a year. And this is the success. They come, in fact, at our table here in Yerushalayim, we've had a number of guests of the tours from Birthright coming through. They're terrific people. And the impact of the participants is significant. 85% of the alumni say that being on the trip was a life-changing experience. 84% of the alumni are raising their children Jewish. Some, even though they're unaffiliated, they may go on to go to yeshiva. They may raise from families and the like. So our question is, and indeed this is one of your expertises, is relationships. We're talking now about a relationship between Birthright, or somebody who funds Birthright, which is a mitzvah enabler, and the doer of the mitzvah. If we'll establish that they're doing a mitzvah, bringing people to Israel, and those people are learning and being in the land of Israel, what's that relationship? What's the relationship between a mitzvah enabler and a mitzvah doer?
Well, you know, in some sense, the enabler is greater than the doer, because either way, the mitzvah gets done. But when you're an enabler, you also added the element of Avos Israel.
So bringing them Jewish identity, bringing people from outside of Israel.
Absolutely. Everyone should buy a piece of that action.
we can start selling this after the show.
The schar for that is enviable. Enviable.
Unbelievable.
Also, you have to put it in the context of pikuach nefesh. Begashmis, if you save a life, there's no greater mitzvah than that. And what are the rules there? Even if there's a suffix, or a svek sveka, even if there's a shadow of a doubt whether you're going to save the life, the mitzvah is you do whatever, mechal Shabbos, or whatever it takes, even on a shadow. So that's begashmis. Beruchnis, it's even more so.
What you're saying, Rabbi Friedman, is that even if they don't become frum, even if they don't go on to become yeshiva, but increasing that avas yisrael, either making kiddushim when they come, or improving their Jewish identity, is something that is indeed incredibly positive.
Or just the attempt to increase their Jewish identity, even if you fail. The same as doing whatever it takes on Shabbos to save a life. And there's no guarantee you're going to save the life.
Right, right. So I saw some poskim that are of the view that even just coming to Israel, but not to live here. There's a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, but just to come, some poskim are of the view that there's a mitzvah just to visit. If you go Dalet Amos, for example, or if you come to Tzorach Mitzvah, being in the land of Israel. So that in of itself, having this program, bringing people here would be a mitzvah, increasing Jewish identity. If they come for Shabbos meals. So all of this is a positive thing. And that's not only the person who is coming, but the people who are facilitating or just funding it as well.
Yes. Okay, that gets a little tricky, because once you go there, then there's a shiloh whether you're allowed to leave.
I assume you've been to Israel and you left, right? Yeah, but
people do. But you need a heter, it's a whole business.
Yeah, Rav Moshe, I remember correctly that there was like somebody in Rabbanus or a principal of a school that asked Rav Moshe, do I have a heter? And certainly, if you can't find somebody to replace you, then you certainly have a heter to leave the land.
So
you
certainly are getting married.
Right, so you certainly had a heter. So,
but in that case, this pikuach nefesh, it could be that the actual pikuach nefesh won't show up until the next generation. In other words, the person that you brought maybe didn't change very much. But like you say, the statistic is they'll marry Jewish. So now the benefit is the children, who will become completely observant. So every mitzvah the child or the grandchild does is to his credit.
Oh, that goes all the way down. All the way down the line.
Forever. La'olam vod.
So let me ask you, what if it's not intended? Somebody funds Birthright, and he's not intending mitzvah, somebody becoming from, somebody learning in yeshiva, mitzvah yeshiva, walking the land of Israel, doesn't intend that at all. You know, when it comes to Shabbos, we have meleches machsheves, right? Meleches machsheves. But how about when it comes to enabling others to do mitzvahs, but you didn't intend it at all? somebody asked me to give a donation to Birthright. I gave a donation to Birthright. I felt pressured to give a donation to Birthright because it was a friend that asked me. No intention of increasing Avos Yisrael, Jewish identity, etc. Is there still a mitzvah involved there?
So that's like losing a dollar bill and an oni finds it. And again, that's just begashmius. That's physical tzedakah. In this case, it's pikuach nefesh. So if you accidentally save a life, the schar is endless.
Amazing.
There's another interesting thing here. B'negeya to our generation. Bringing a young Jew to Israel has a curative effect. It's cathartic because every Jew walks around with a complex. We're the minority, nobody likes us. What's the point of being Jewish? The pride and the comfort of being a Jew is missing. And anything that can restore that, just get comfortable being Jewish. Stop hiding behind a rock. These people who come to Israel without intending mitzvahs, without intending frumkeit, without intending anything holy, but they come away more comfortable in their skin. And that is, again, pikuach nefesh, especially for this generation. Mm-hmm. So anything anyone can do to increase Jewish pride, even if it doesn't end up being an actual mitzvah performance, is a huge mitzvah.
Right. Rabbi Friedman, let me ask you, it's not our core question, but it's something that's very much on my mind. We're talking about schar of mitzvah, schar in olam haba. Actually, let me ask a precursor question, because we're going to ask, can you transfer, can you not transfer schar and mitzvahs? Would it be the same shaila, transferring schar and mitzvahs and transferring a chelik in olam haba? And my follow-up question to that is, what does that mean, olam haba? What does that mean, tchias ameisim? What are the distinctions between them? But first, if we could talk about transferring a mitzvah, is there a difference between mitzvahs and schar and olam haba, or is that the same thing effectively? If you do a mitzvah, you're building a chelik in olam haba.
So first, let's get the definition for mitzvah. Yeah? What exactly is mitzvah? We know putting on tefillin is a mitzvah. But what does mitzvah mean? What does it mean, schar mitzvah mitzvah? What does it mean, schar mitzvah ba'olam hazeh leke? What does it mean, mitzvahs lav lehem nisnitnu? Mitzvahs were not given for your enjoyment. Well, if I get a schar, how can I not enjoy it? So what exactly are we talking about here? And then the Mishnah that says, Al tiyu ka'avodim ha'misham shemesharav al manas l'kabul pras. So we keep hearing about the mitzvah, the schar, the reward, the great reward, the big reward, the endless reward, and then we're told to ignore it. Don't even think about the schar. Well, if I'm not doing it for the schar, why am I doing it? So the definition of mitzvah means the fulfillment of rotzen elyon, fulfillment of what Hashem wants. That's mitzvah. So the question, is it a mitzvah to help somebody do a mitzvah? What's the question? Does Hashem want it? Does this facilitate the Eibishter's rotzen and plan? It does. Well, then it's a mitzvah. Anything that contributes to the Eibishter's rotzen is a mitzvah. Anything that goes against his rotzen is an aver.
Rabbi Friedman, I want to really thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. Very insightful. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Sei gedankt.
Joining us now is Rabbi Avi Wiesenfeld. Rabbi Wiesenfeld is the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Beis David. He's a popular speaker, the author of a number of halachic works. Frankly, a number of them I have on my shelf right in front of me. And he is also the Rav and Posek of the Kav Halacha Beis Horah. Rabbi Wiesenfeld, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Terrific. So, Rabbi Wiesenfeld, our topic is a little bit off the beaten track, frankly, but you do have an expertise in a number of halachic areas, and I do see that you have interest in some certain unconventional areas, which is great. I have their svarim and enjoy them tremendously. So frankly, our fundamental question here is, can mitzvahs be bought and sold? And I think it would be helpful if we start at the famous precedent for such a concept, the Shutfus Yisachar Zvulun, which means that you can have somebody working and somebody who is learning, and the person who is working is supporting the person who is learning and has the schar of learning even though he's working. So how does that work? Does everyone agree that that is effective or not? And maybe then we'll build onto that, applying it to other types of mitzvahs.
Okay, so first of all, it's an incredible, incredible topic. I'm very, very excited to speak about this topic. It's very interesting, like you said, off the beaten path. And it's something that I think could be very, very practical in certain situations. So you mentioned to be starting with the Shutvus of Yisachar v'Zvulun, which is known to be the partnership between that who is learning and that who is working. Can one effectively do that? Is that a possibility to be able to pay for somebody's learning and receive the schar that he is getting? So this is actually something that's been debated for a while. In fact, the very first time that we find this being discussed that I am aware of is Rabbeinu Haigoin, where he brings down, it's interesting, his loshen, because he doesn't like it. He doesn't like this whole idea. His loshen is, Kidvorim elu divrei hevel, she'in nismach aleim. You can't be soimach on that. He said, why would you think that the schar, the reward of somebody's maisim tovim, his good deeds, can go to somebody else? He says, just like a person cannot be punished for somebody else's averas, so how can it be that he can receive his merits, his chusim? So it's very clear that Rabbeinu Haigoin is against this whole idea. However, Rabbeinu Yerucham likes the whole idea, and he says that it absolutely works. He says at the end of the day, and he has a whole, lengthy piece on this, that if he says, if you help somebody with their mitzvahs, in other words, if you make their mitzvahs possible, so why is it that I cannot receive the schar, the reward for that mitzvah? There should be no reason why not. He wasn't able to do it without me. I enabled him to do it, and therefore I should be able to receive in return something for what he gave me. So it sounds like, obviously, without going into too much detail, this is already subject to a machloikas between Rabbeinu Haigoin and Rabbeinu Yerucham, whether or not the idea of the shutfas, the partnership of Yisachar v'Zvulun, works over here.
So bottom line, how do we paskin on that? Because that's an important machloikas.
Okay, very important machloikas. Let's bring it to halacha lemaisa. So there is a talk in Yeridei Siman Reish Mem Vav, and he brings down, and this is also a famous Rambam, that he says that every single Jewish male has an obligation, a chiyuv, to learn Torah. And he writes, it doesn't make a difference if you're poor, if you're rich. It doesn't make a difference if you're healthy or you're sick, chas v'shalom. He says everyone has an obligation to learn. But then he writes as follows. He says, what happens if a person, it's impossible. He's just not able to learn. So what should he do? He should help somebody else learn. And then the Torah adds, it's as if he himself has learned. The Shulchan Aruch, again, Yeridei Reish Mem Vav, brings this down, the same idea that everybody has an obligation to learn Torah, but if you cannot learn, help others. He doesn't actually bring the line, which the Torah said, of, and it's as if you yourself have learned, which sounds like that, yes, you can help someone, but it doesn't mean you get his schar. The Ramah, however, and this is obviously because of the Shulchan Aruch, it's a little bit of a machloikas, how we paskin. But the Ramah, when he brings it down, he seems to go straight with the shita of Rabbeinu Yerucham that holds, and he adds this word, that it is as if you learned, which basically means that he's holding, like Rabbeinu Yerucham in the machloikas of Yisachar v'Zvulun, that if you enable somebody to learn, then it is as if you yourself have actually learned something. Rav Moshe is a Chuvan Igus Moshe, and he writes very clearly, he says, first of all, we always ask Ashkenazim always paskin like the Ramah. So there's no question over here that we also paskin like the Ramah, especially over here that we have a Shach. The Shach also goes with this Mahalach, and the Vilna Goin also in the Gra also is Mashma that way. So it sounds like the Psak of the Ramah is Halacha Lemaisa, which means that yes, if you enable somebody to learn, you give them money, you give them the ability, then you can actually receive their Shach. It's as if you yourself have learned.
That seems to be accepted stock. People always talk about the Shutzlis Yisachar Zvulun. It's a wonderful investment to make. No one ever says it doesn't work. So we see there that as long as you're enabling somebody to learn, it's as if you are doing the learning. So I guess when it applies to our question of this show, we're not focused so much on outsourcing your learning, but outsourcing other types of mitzvahs. For example, if I see that I'm a shvach in a certain area, somebody is learning all the time and he wants to build his resume for Olam Haba by outsourcing chesed. Or we see somebody that is doing an amazing job in a certain area in mitzvahs and he wants to build that on his resume. Can we outsource other types of mitzvahs as well, kind of like the Shutvus Yisachar Zvulun, or is it limited to learning and we cannot extend it to other types of areas, other types of mitzvahs?
Okay, so this is also a continuation of this incredible topic. And the truth is, the bochim in my yeshiva will probably be very interested in this one. You know, can I lie in bed and pay somebody to put on tefillin for me, or maybe bench for me, because it maybe takes a little bit too long? So it's obviously, it's an interesting question, and it might even be a difference in certain types of mitzvahs. Certain mitzvahs require a person to do that mitzvah himself with his own body, as opposed to a mitzvah that you just get reward for, like you mentioned, chesed, where, you know, I'm not doing it, but I can ask somebody else to do it because I have no obligation myself. So it actually may depend on the type of mitzvah, but without going into too much detail, just to understand where this comes from, and as to answer your question of can we apply this idea to other mitzvahs? So there is a Maharam al Shaka that brings this down and was asked this exact question of not only Torah, does it apply to other mitzvahs or not? And he actually starts off by saying, we don't find a real source, a real makar for this, except the Rav Hai Goin, which obviously is talking about the of the Zvulun, which he actually says that the words of Rav Hai Goin are so divrei Kabbalah, they're so Kabbalistic that we cannot add or take away anything from them. But he seems to be of the opinion that yes, you can apply this to other mitzvahs. It's not only the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. If it works by Talmud Torah, if it allows me to get the schar, the reward of Talmud Torah, when I simply allow someone, help someone, support someone with money, with finances, so I get the schar for their learning, or at least part of it, whatever it may be. So therefore, the Maharam al Shaka does actually want to be making and say, yeah, you could apply that to other things as well. The Minchas Hitzchok, Dine Weiss, who was a Rav in Manchester and then later in Yerushalayim. So he also writes the same thing in his Tshuvas, that there's no reason really to be mechalik between Torah and other mitzvahs. Torah is one of the mitzvahs. It might be a high mitzvah, but it's one of them. And there's no real reason to be mechalik, to make a difference between supporting someone in Torah and getting the schar, and helping someone to perform a mitzvah and getting the schar is that way. So the Marsham also seems to go with that. So we find a whole bunch of poskim who are very much of the opinion that it does not only apply to Torah, it applies to any mitzvah, that if I enable someone to do that, I, yes, can receive the schar in that case.
All right, so in other words, I can go to somebody and buy a mitzvah effectively, maybe not for the passport, but for an ongoing basis. If I want to invest in somebody who's doing a mitzvah, or if I see somebody that I want to help out and I have schar mitzvahs, I could probably transfer that schar mitzvahs to them as well. It doesn't have to be a commercial transaction, I would think.
Right. Right, that's exactly good. Although the truth is, the matter is, there are poskim who disagree with this. In the Tshuvas, Meshiv Dover already brings down such a case. It's actually such an unbelievable thing. I always find it amazing when, you know, you take a question, which is such an interesting question, and yet you can find, you know, maybe not exactly the question is discussed, but similar questions are discussed. And it just shows us how deep and how vast Torah is, that every situation can always be found. There's always a makar, even the latest technology and the latest situations that come up. It's just an incredible, it gives me so much chizuk when you learn halacha that, you know, anything in the new generations, what are we going to do with this? What do we do? We've got no one that discusses it. So we look in earlier sources and we find it. So we find that exactly in this situation as well. In the Meshiv Dover, he brings down such a case that somebody did this actually, and they outsourced their mitzvahs and they bought it from somebody else for, you know, all these sorts of things, and it caused a tremendous machlekes. And he writes down that they went to Beis Din. He actually is of the opinion that it does not work. He holds that you cannot do that. It doesn't work. You can't just pay someone to do mitzvahs. You can't pay someone to do things for you and you receive the schar for that. So it's not so simple. Yes, the majority hold it's okay, but there are those poskim who do disagree in this situation.
So I remember there was like a story about the Gra.
It's a famous one brought down in the Sefer Somach Zvulun. He brings down an incredible story that one year the Vilna Goin could not find an Esrog. Can you imagine the entire Vilna, the whole place? There wasn't an Esrog to be found. And finally, they managed to locate somebody that had an Esrog, and he was even willing to sell it to the Vilna Goin. They told him the Vilna Goin wants your Esrog. What a schus. What an incredible merit to have the Vilna Goin to shake your esrog. And he said, no problem, I'll sell it to him. But there's one condition. And the condition is that all the schar, all the reward of that mitzvah that the Vilna Goin gets from shaking the lulav is going to go to me. I'll sell it to him, but I want the schar. I want the reward. The Vilna Goin happily, readily agreed. He paid for the esrog. He got the esrog. And he shook it on Yontov. And he had tremendous simcha that year. And the people around him said, Rebbe, you know, why this year? Why are you so happy? Why are you so excited? What's the great simcha? He said, I'll tell you why. Because I wait my whole life. When am I able to mekayim the chazal, Mishneh Pirkei Avos, that I'm able to become a mitzvah shaloyal manas lekabel schar, to do a mitzvah not in order to get reward. Normally, I don't have a choice. You do a mitzvah, you automatically get reward. But in this situation, I'm not getting the reward because I sold it to the guy. And therefore, this was my first opportunity in my life to do a mitzvah, totally l'shem shamayim, all for Hashem. And it was tremendous simcha for him. So you see from this Vilna Gaon already, that the Vilna Gaon obviously held of this idea that yes, you can outsource your mitzvahs and it doesn't only apply to Torah.
So the Gra was on board for that. That's amazing. So where we are right now, because I want to extend this a little bit, is when it comes to outsourcing your learning, the Shutzos Yisachar Zvulun, we Paskin and the Ramag, that's Aligra's Moshe Paskins, that indeed you can outsource your learning if you're enabling somebody to learn, you're financing it, you're supporting him. That is indeed doable as if you did the learning. And when it comes to other mitzvahs, it's a machlokas of the poskim if we extend that or not. Some poskim say that we can extend it. We will use the precedent of the Shutzos Yisachar Zvulun, and other poskim say we cannot extend it. That's something just specific for learning, but it's not extendable to other mitzvahs. But how about averus? And we're not talking now about, can I sell my averus? There's no market for averus. But if somebody has averus and for whatever reason he can't do tshuva, or he's not sincere in his tshuva, but he wants to get rid of it, can he pay somebody to take his averus off his balance sheet, off his income statement? Now, can he pay somebody, I've got some averus and I'm offering X, Y, and Z. And just like we can transfer mitzvahs, according to some poskim, can we transfer averus as well?
It's a great, great question. And again, like I said, there'd be a lot of people who would be very interested in this. What could we do? Well, how can I get rid of my averus? Which we have to understand exactly what that means, because, you know, what is an avera? What does it do to the world? You know, like Rabbi Yisrael Salanter famously wrote that you can have a Jew that speaks Lashon Hora in Yerushalayim, there'll be a Yid in Paris who will be Machal Shabbos Chas V'Shalom. So an avera, obviously, it's hard to give a market value. It's hard to give it, you know, to quantify an avera. But it does bring to mind a famous maisa about the Marsha. I've spoken about this before. The Marsha talks about this, and it's brought down the Sefer Samach Zvulun, where there was two partners. In fact, they went to do business. I think they were selling rugs abroad, and they were very successful. And two partners, and one of them did a terrible avera. He committed a really, really bad avera, and it got him such in a bad situation. He just couldn't take it. He regretted it. He started crying. Nobody could comfort him. He got to a situation where it bothered him so much that he just didn't know. He was beside himself for doing this terrible, terrible avera. His partner in business saw what a bad state he was in, and there was nobody that could help him. So he had one option. He said to him, listen, I have an idea for you. I'm willing to take your, you pay me, I will take your avera for you. Can you imagine? His partner said, really? You'll do that? That's incredible. That is so exciting. I finally found a way out. She said, I'll pay anything, whatever you ask. So whatever the sum of money was that they agreed on, so he gave him that, and he sold him the avera. And that is the end of part A of the story. Continuing the story, the day came after 120 where the partner that actually bought the Avera, he left the world, he was lifted up, and he came in front of the Beis Din Shalmaila. And he comes in front of the Beis Din Shalmaila, and they started giving him all his mitzvahs and all his Averas, and all of a sudden comes along this one particular Avera, which he says, excuse me, this one's not mine. I think you must have made a mistake, confused somewhere. I never did this Avera. And they said to him, well, what do you mean? Because you did. You bought it from your friend. And he started crying. No. I didn't mean to actually get punished for it. I wanted to calm my friend down. I just wanted to, you know, to do it. Punish me maybe for taking the money in the wrong way, shaloi kadin. But don't punish me for that avera that I didn't do. So the Beis Din said, okay, you've got a case against your friend. Your friend was the one that sold it to you. He's the one that did the avera. So I guess take him to Beis Din. So the partner that was in Shemayim, up in Beis Din Shemayla, he came to his alive partner in a dream, and one after the other, until eventually his partner, who was alive and well, kept having this dream. He said, one second, what is going on over here? So he went to his Rebbe, the Heilige Marsha, and the Rebbe said to him like this. He said to him, next time he comes in a dream, tell him the following. Tell him that al pi halacha, when you take someone to Beis Din, you always have to go to their Beis Din, right? Whoever you accept, whoever you're taking to Beis Din, whoever you're trying to get money from, generally you go to his Beis Din. So you're going to come to my Beis Din. So they went to, they're cutting obviously the whole story. I'm not going to go into all the details. They went to Beis Din with the Marsha, and the partner that was alive said, yes, I sold it 100% b'lev shalim. The partner that died came along and said, no, I didn't want to buy the avera of what he did. I just, you know, didn't want to get punished over that. I just, you know, wanted to try and calm him down, whatever it is. So the Marsha actually paskened over there that the sale is a good sale. It works. And therefore, the partner that's alive is correct. What he sold works. And therefore, it's an incredible thing that we see from this Marsha that, like you asked, that can you pay somebody to take care of Iris? And again, I would have no idea what the market value would be for such a thing. But if we could ever work that out, then the Marsha would obviously be of the opinion that it would work.
Yeah, fascinating. You know, I did see a number of years ago an article that somebody had posted to sell on eBay a chelik of his olam haba or his entire olam haba. So I guess there are ways to create a market nowadays. You have an auction for who wants to. I'll pay you to take my aveiros away. But this begs the question. This all sounds bizarre. Somebody does a mitzvah. And somebody can buy that mitzvah, or according to Zampo's scheme, or you can transfer your aveira to somebody. There's a pasuk in Yechezkel that says tzitka sadzadik alaviya. The mitzvahs that somebody does, he keeps his mitzvahs. Those are his mitzvahs. Rishas harasha alaviya. The rishas, the aveiras that somebody does, he's going to get punished for it, not somebody else. So the question is, what would be a svara or svaras behind the ability to pay somebody to take your aveiras off your back? How would that work? What's the mechanism for that?
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so there is a Marasham. The Marasham talks about this exact question, and he actually holds that it does work. And his basic idea, you could sum up, I guess, in one word, and that is arvus. Arvus means, and we know the Torah tells us about the bris that Moshe Rabbeinu made with Klal Yisrael at the Arvus Moya before they came into Eretz Yisrael, that they go through the whole story that they had to bring Klal Yisrael as the Arevim, as the guarantor. And that became the idea that many people speak about and many people quote, Klal Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. In other words, we're all responsible. I guess that would be loosely translated as that, responsible for each other. And therefore, that's the reason, by the way, that many halachas work. We can make kiddush time after time, even though we've already been yotze kiddush. We can lay in the Megillah, maybe. And the same idea for Purim. Also, because Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh, in other words, we become responsible for each other. And therefore, says the Marasham, the same thing would be over here. So if one person would accept upon himself the either, I guess, the mitzvahs and also even the aveiras in that case. He is, if he's responsible for his friend, could accept upon himself the punishment of his friend. There's no reason why that wouldn't work. The very interesting tshuva in the Betzela Chochma, he brings a raya, a proof from the Gemara in Sanhedrin Memches about the klolas, the curses that David HaMelech gave Yoav, that the punishment that he killed Avner. And eventually they were Mekayim later on in the generations of David. And Rashi over there in the Gemara in Sanhedrin explains this. And Rashi explains that because David basically accepted upon himself the klolas, so it was Mekayim in his own generations years later. So the idea basically that I would understand that the mechanism would work, like the Marasham said, it's really arvus. It's really, we're all responsible for each other. Just like I'm responsible to try and, like, for example, we've got the mitzvah of toichacha, the mitzvah of rebuke. What does it mean? I have to rebuke someone if I see him doing something wrong? What do you mean? I'm my person. You're your person. How is it that I have a heta? Okay, nowadays we don't rebuke people because we don't know how to do it, but theoretically, if we knew how to do it, so then we could do it. But why? It's nothing to do with me. The Gemara in Shabbos brings us an example of one of the Amoraim that saw their neighbor doing something wrong and he got punished for that. But what do you mean? I didn't do anything wrong. And the Gemara says, because he had the opportunity to make a machar to protest, and he didn't. Why? Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. If we see in the Gemara that somebody could get punished for something that someone he had the opportunity to help and he didn't, even though he didn't do the Aveira, so then for sure I would say it works in our case where a person actually wantingly accepts upon himself the punishment from somebody else. Now that mechanism would work as well. That's what I would assume.
Similar to if you have a guarantor on a loan, that if you have a lender and a borrower and a guarantor on a loan, if that creditor, that lender goes after the guarantor instead of going after the borrower is going to be off the hook. So here, effectively, we have the guarantor on that aveira who is getting punished instead of the person who committed the aveira, and that's getting the person who committed the aveira off the hook. Now I got to tell you, I did speak with a head of a Beis Din. And I asked him the Shaila, like, what if somebody would come in and litigate and over mitzvahs and aveiras? I said, like, how would you handle such a situation? And he said, there's no way that this is effective. It cannot work that you can buy mitzvahs and averos and pay somebody to take your averos. So give me the other side of this, that this is totally ineffective and this is something that will have no validity up here halacha.
Right. So the first thing I would say is there are various ideas why it would not work. The Shaiz and Shuvas Machaneh Chaim brings a few of them in Choshe Mishpat. He talks again about this question, and he brings a few of the proof, which I'm not going to go into detail, and he explains why it doesn't work. One of his proofs, for example, is from a Medrash in Shir HaShirim that talks about the nations of the world, the Goyim. They could give all the money in the world, but it would not be a kapora for their averus. The second idea he gives is from the Yalkut Shemoni in Parashat Vezoyis HaBracha, that he says that avera is something that only tshuva really works to change it. And I think this is something, based on what I said earlier, I think we can understand it, that it works as follows, that an avera isn't something tangible. It's not something you can quantify. It's not something you can put into a box and say, here it is, take it. It's a metzias. There's a certain damage, and perhaps maybe if we would learn the sugya of averas, maybe we would get more of a sensitivity to this, is that there's a metzias, there's a certain damage that it does, not only to our neshama, but also to the world as a whole. That money cannot change, it cannot be transferred. It was done. It affects the neshama that did it. It affects the guf that performed it, and it affects the surroundings. To simply sort of transfer that has no bearings, that has no, there's no makor, there's no idea, that there's no way you could do that, because there's nothing tangible really to be able to do that, because the damage that it does. Maybe you could say it's different to a mitzvah. Mitzvah has a reward. A reward is you will get something in the next world. Okay, so that I can give up. But maybe the avera, the bad thing that it brings, the ashpah that it brings into the world, maybe that's just something that's just not a possibility to give over. And that's possibly why that, like the Machaneh Chaim brings from the Yalkut Shemoni, you need tshuva. Tshuva was something that the Rabbeinu Shlomo, as we know, the Gemara tells us, was created before anything else, because it needs to be changed. And that is the only mechanism that we know that can ever change anything. That's an avera.
So we've been talking about selling and buying of mitzvahs, paying somebody to take your averas, learning. Would the same concepts apply to selling a portion, a chelik in Olam Haba? Is that the same thing, or is that maybe something that somebody really owns? Like, I've created a chelik in Olam Haba. So even according to the shitas that you can't transfer mitzvahs, would we say that you can transfer a chelik in Olam Haba, or would we say the reverse? That even according to the shitas that say you can transfer it, that's something that's more tangible and unitary. Something that is a mitzvah itself is transferable, but a chelik in Olam Haba, that's not something you can transfer. So would we say the same analysis would apply there, or would that be something that's different?
Okay, so I would definitely say that you can hear both sides of the coin. It's interesting. I remember hearing a number of years ago that there was a big person in Kirov who dealt with a lot of kids off the derech. And he used to say that he actually used this in his, I guess, his, you know, ways of getting boys and kids back onto the derech. By a kid would say, I'm not interested in anything, and I don't want to do my own thing, and I'm not interested in this Yiddishkeit and in this whole religion. And he would say to him, oh, okay, so can I buy your Olam Haba from you? And all of a sudden, it shook them up, and they're like, no, that you cannot do. So it seems to be that, you know, first of all, we see from the Vilna Gaon that there's no question you obviously can do so, right? Because what did he sell? He sold his schar. Schar is where? Schar is the Olam Haba. It's in the next world. There's no question whatsoever. And as you mentioned as well, the Olam Haba is something you build in this world. Like the Mesillas Yesharim says, this whole world is only a corridor, because everything you build is in the next world. So that which you build, you know, maybe you could say it can be sold, because it's something that is my reward. Maybe I could sell it. But I can't see the reason why it would be any different. I can imagine it's basically the same as everything else. There's no real difference between that. And if a person, you know, could sell his schar, could sell also his olam haba, it would be the same as buying mitzvahs.
Parting thoughts, because I'm concerned people may want to go out and just outsource their mitzvahs and pawn off their, there may be a pawn shop for averas now. So final thoughts on to be mechazik us to do our own mitzvahs and avoid our own averas.
Okay, so obviously, Api Alocha, we can see that there are two sides, and how exactly does this work, and how can we quantify? And as you mentioned, in based in this would never really work. None of the Dayanim are going to start sitting down to try and figure out how much you can and cannot do. You know, it's something that we obviously don't do. It's not even something that we don't do. I think it's something that we shouldn't do. And it's simply because at the end of the day, the mitzvahs that we have are worth so much. We all know the famous Chofetz Chaim, that the Chofetz Chaim says, when somebody came to him and said, I've got no money, what do I do? I need to do something. So he takes the Chofetz Chaim with an idea. He said, let me sell my mitzvah of putting on tefillin for one day. I would like the schar in this world. Right? I want the schar. Let me have the schar in this world. The Chofetz Chaim famously answered him back and said, let me ask you a question. If you'd walk into the local makolet, you walk into the grocery store and you buy a loaf of bread and you'd give them, if it existed, $1 million bill, right? You have enough money to buy the loaf of bread, but they cannot give you the change back. So Chazal tell us, schar, schar b'hai alma leka. There's no schar for a mitzvah in this world. It's impossible. The value of a mitzvah is something that we cannot understand. We cannot comprehend. And therefore, to ask somebody else to do a mitzvah for us, we should want to do our own mitzvahs. We should machazik ourselves to try whatever we can. There are various that we do. Of course, it's difficult. We'd love to get rid of them. We'd love to pay someone to take them. But at the end of the day, as we know, the Gemara tells us that when we do real tshuva, then those mitzvahs, those averis turn into zchuyos, they turn into actual mitzvahs, even maybe in a higher medrega than the mitzvahs that we perform. We have to learn to be responsible for our own actions and realize that we were sent on this world, yes, to go through challenges and difficulties. But at the end of the day, we come out successful because we tried everything we could. We did every mitzvah that we possibly could get our hands on. We tried to stay away from the averis. And those that we didn't manage, we'll do tshuva on. The Rebbe Shalom understands where we're coming from. He understands the generation he put us in. And he wants us to be who we are, not to try and get somebody else involved in our lives and to try and take all of our schar and our averes and mitzvahs in this world. So Be'ez Hashem, we should be zoiches, siyata d'shmaya, to try and mekayim all the mitzvahs, to appreciate the mitzvahs that we have the opportunity to be able to do. And obviously to try and to learn to do tshuva based on the averes that we do have, that we did stumble on, to make sure that we don't repeat those and we've done tshuva for those as well.
Rabbi Wiesenfeld, I want to thank you so much for joining us. It's really been fascinating.
Thank you very, very much for having me.
A pleasure. Joining us now is Rabbi Zalman Graus. Rabbi Graus is a well-regarded Tohen Beis Din, a Dayan, and a Mechaber Sfarim. Rabbi Graus, it's a true pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Hi. Thank you.
So, Rabbi Graus, if somebody gives you a call, and he asks you to represent him in Beis Din for the following, I'd love to hear how you would respond. So somebody calls you up and says, I sold my schar mitzvahs, or I sold my chelik in Olam Haba, and I want to sue the buyer and rescind the contract because I didn't understand the significance of what I was doing. I didn't know what I was selling, or my wife is upset at me that I sold it. What would you respond to him?
You're asking me from Choshe Mishpat side, not from your Yerdeya side. And although many poskim speaking about it, dealing with that from Choshe Mishpat sides, but in Shechan Aruch it is only mentioned in Yerdeya, not in Hilchas Tzedakah, and definitely not in Choshe Mishpat. It's only in Hilchas Tamid Torah. That means we cannot borrow concepts from one side of Choshe Mishpat, from Yerdeya to Choshe Mishpat, and from Choshe Mishpat to Yerdeya. And I would analyze it a little bit from Choshe Mishpat side, and then maybe I'll get back from Yerdeya, if you want to hear it from Yerdeya side too, because you're asking only for Choshe Mishpat side, but I will get to it. Choshe Mishpat side, I don't see any shape and form of this kind of selling as you formed it. Because let's say, forget about this heaven schar. Even if I was hired for by somebody to do a job and he has to pay me actually in dollars, tangible dollars, I cannot sell this. A milve bape you cannot sell. A milve bape you can only sell in halacha something what's called a chiyuvot shtar, and you sell the shtar b'ksive mesire. That's mean. You transferred actually the shtar, and you have to make an additional shtar, an assignment shtar from me to the other person. Without that, it has no any validity. There's questions in Achronim today. There's something called Situmte, if you may sell in a shtar in a forum. But even from legal point, there is a forum how to assign a note. And from there are some places that the only validity if you have to actually to transfer the paper document and write an assignment, even if you want to write and assign a mortgage. Alachas kama v'kama, you cannot sell something what you have no idea what it is not tangible, and it's a milve bape, and it is not something what's, you cannot sell something adov shalibol oilam. I don't see any shape and form that you are able to sell it.
Rabbi Graus, if there was a shtar In a certain situation I'm familiar with, that somebody brought the schar mitzvahs to somebody else, there was a shtar and a check for $100,000, and the check was cashed, and there was a written shtar between the two. Would that change anything, or is it still a davar shelo
balo? So davar shelo balo olam, you cannot change. Again, it's a ksiva mesira. You have to have a shtar from the who owes you. That's mean in this particular case, you have to have a shtar from Ribbono shel olam that gives you schar, and you assign this shtar. But this is something that's far-fetched. It's impossible. That is not halachic. Doesn't deal with that. In contrary, halacha has no validity whatsoever. The whole issue is, you may phrase it in a different way. And I think that's what the poskim, at least the Shulchan Aruch and Rabbi Yeruchem and the Gemara, Rabbeinu Yeruchem, and the Gemara and the Marshaker and the Goinim, what talks to that is a different shape. You are hiring somebody. Let's say somebody is has a job. He's a driver, and you see that he's fake. He has capability to learn Torah. You tell him, stop driving. I hire you. I will pay you for learning. That is the issue. Then you have a schar in his learning. That is what the Gemara meant, and that's what the not you sell or buy schar. You are hiring him to learn. And that maybe has a forum how to do it from Choshen Mishpitza. Now, again, not to sell the schar. You hire somebody, you should learn. And then you are enabling him from your day side, you are enabling him to learn. And that means you hire like you hire a poel. But also in Aloha, a poel may choyze b'chatzi hayom. Maybe it's not valid here because it's Eved. You learn it from Eved. Well, Evidly, you can be Eved for a bunch of them. You cannot be Eved le'Eved. But learning is maybe not an Eved. There is a nafkamina, and many poskim say that even a poel, if you make kinyonim, proper shtoris, then the poel cannot choizer. That is a different category, and we have to deal with that issue from this kind of category. Not this category of ischar, only from the category, I hire you to learn.
Right, and when it comes to the schar, what if somebody wants to purchase a schar from something prior that existed, a mitzvah that was already done in the past? Is that still
impossible? As I explained before, it's impossible to sell. Like you cannot sell a credit. You cannot sell a credit. You cannot sell an obligation. You cannot sell a credit. The halacha doesn't give you a form how to sell credit, even in this world. I'm not talking, this is also far-fetched because we don't know exactly, it's not tangible. We don't know the schar, we don't understand exactly what this is. We cannot attach it to anything, any value to it, in our world, value in the Olam Haba. This is not oranges with apples. This is something that's untangible. You cannot change it. But beside it, you cannot sell some credit, any credit you cannot sell.
So if there was such a transaction, and the person who bought the mitzvah, so he paid $10,000, $20,000. He listens to the show, he listens to this conversation, and he says, it's a mekartos. I couldn't do that. Such a
not a question, mekartos, not a toast. It's something which you sell. What is the sell? Cannot. It's if you sell a dovah shaloi bolo, or dovah shaloi boi mamish, you are entitled to get your money back. There are questions in some situation that you knew in advance and you were told and it was clear that this mekach is not a mekach and you give it anyway. That's a different issue. That's a makadosh achoyso. That's mean he wanted to give it a gift. He doesn't. That's a different story. But as a deal, we are here in the United States. We are used to everything transforms in money. Everything transforms in dealing, in selling, in buying. But it doesn't work in this kind of things. I'm trying also to even in money, even if you have a credit for money, you cannot sell it. And that is not a sellable item. It's not, there's no way how to sell it. And we have to deal it in a totally different way. I hire somebody to do something, and there we may discuss it, but not even for Hashemishpat side, this issue. And then we may go a little bit from your day side, a little bit the Agoda, and a little bit the Aloha about that. What is really, what does it really mean? How, what's chus I have in that? Not, don't go too much. Let's not megashim it and have it the selling and the buying of this heart. This doesn't give a good taste even from Rochnias.
Right. I hear that. So bottom line is, if somebody did enter such a transaction, he probably has the right to his money back, but there was no schar that was purchased.
He didn't purchase anything. It's not for Choshimish, besides, he didn't purchase anything. And sometimes in Tzedakah, is maybe about pay. It's not even Tzedakah. You see, in Shonach, it's not mentioned this aloch in Lichas Tzedakah. This has nothing to do not with transactions. It has to do one thing. In enable people to learn, that's a big mitzvah. That is a big schar for that enabling. There's that in this, it's divided in two halves. Sometimes you motivate, sometimes you enable. What the difference is, for example, if you go to somebody what he earned a big fortune, and he doesn't work, he is going around ladik, and somebody tell him, "I'll give you money, sit and learn." And he learns. That is, means he causes him, he motivates him, give him a sense in learning, that he should have some interest to learn. There is one issue. From Rashi, some are medayik, the halacha is only enabling to learn. I must tell you, it is true that some achroinim poskim specifically from our time, they have casted onion, even in Igros Moshe, and some are dealing as it is in some partnership. They have the yukim, that's a partnership, and they want to say that partnership doesn't need kinyonim. It doesn't fit in Chosh Mishpat. Even this as partnership doesn't need kinyonim is a big machloikas, and aloha is that we need kinyonim. There is shittas that we do together, doesn't need kinyonim. But what kinyonim means, again, kinyonim means that you create something valuable. Let's say two shoemakers, they won't want, they didn't like this competition between them. And they make an agreement, whatever I will make the day, you will make, we'll divide. Therefore, we don't need to fight about the price in sitting in airport and fighting for giving cheaper. We give the same price and we divide. You have more, I have more. That is machlokes in poskim. Some poskim say that you don't need kinyonim for that. That means you will divide the money, what you earn between them. But how you divide, this is the third party. There, it means I will get in my pocket the money and I'll give you, it's an obligation. Instead, for not competing, I obligate myself to give the money for you. But not a third party. We cannot say that all the people should give you or should give me. There's a third party to the entire agreement. But he's not a party. He didn't make your agreement with you. He didn't sign anything. He's not involved in that. And you take him as a part. You cannot make a shutvus with him, without him. You can make a part between the... That's about achroinim. They are not so chashimishpitly focused. They are more focused in agoda. And they say all kinds of things. You know, the orachaim. And we had this sparshish kolim. The orachaim says that shek la kodesh, he... The Ramban say differently, but he said shekel kodesh means kof, means double. We don't find this expression because the Ramban says that's not the meaning of shekel kodesh. He brings somebody what interprets that way, but he said the shekel was never kofel, only the money was kofel. But I'm not going that. It's only in close parentheses. The Orachaim is only saying shekel kodesh, shekel kofel, because is the giver. And the recipient, the learner gets the entire schar, and the giver gets also the entire schar. Therefore, shekla kodesh kof. Fine, that is something what has nothing to do with dealing with. That is, the Chaim says so, probably is so, or sure it is so, but it's nothing to do with dealing, choshimishpid dealings.
Right, right. Rabbi Graus, I want to thank you so much for joining us and shedding some light on this complicated issue. Thank you so much.
Kol tov.
Joining us now is Rabbi Yona Rietz. Rabbi Rietz is the Av Beis Din of the CRC, which is the Chicago Rabbinical Council. He's been a dayan for around 20 years, an attorney even longer, and he's also a Rosh Yeshiva at Rabbi Yitzchak HaChanan. Rabbi Rietz, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
So Rabbi Rietz, our topic, a little bit off the beaten track, is buying and selling of Schar Mitzvahs, buying and selling of a chelik, somebody else's chelik in Olam Haba. And as a dayan, as the head of the Beis Din, I wanted to find out from you, if somebody comes in and says, Rabbi Rietz, I need to send out a hazmana. This is the situation I'm in. I actually sold my chelik in Olam Haba, or I sold my schar in certain mitzvahs, and I want to rescind the deal. I didn't know what I was doing. I sold it. I got some good money, but nothing worth the schar of Olam Haba, the schar of the mitzvahs. And I'm interested in rescinding the deal. I want you to be Toveya, the person who bought it, and let's unravel the deal. Is there a basis for rescinding such a transaction?
Probably doesn't really work. Shlomo Kluger has a tshuva in the Tuv Tam Vedas about this, where people made a deal about selling Olam Haba in return for money, and the person who was the seller wanted to unravel the deal. And he said that the sale was batal mevotal. He quoted from the Gemara in Sota and Daf Kuf Aleph and Aleph that spoke about how after Hillel had learned a lot of Torah, so his brother Shebna wanted to give him some funding and to share in all of the schar. And then there was a bas call that came out from the Shemayim and said, that it doesn't work. You can't sell a sale in Olam Haba. So Shlomo Kluger thought that for sure the sale was batol umevotol. It's funny, the lokeach didn't want to get his money back. He just wanted to keep his chelik. But according to Shlomo Kluger, that was insanity. That here he had an opportunity to get his money back and he didn't even get any value. You can't get schar olam haba. Says that you learn from the word bahava, that bahava means that it's all a chesed, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu gives people a chelik and olam haba. What he's going to give to one person, he's not necessarily going to give to the next person who thinks that they're acquiring that portion. So it probably doesn't work.
Now, that I assume that would be the case, whether you have the buyer selling the seller or the seller buying the seller, but selling, suing the buyer. Either way, then, if it's not effective, it's not going to be effective.
Yeah, you had a case where there was a buyer who had paid for half of somebody's olam haba and all of their schar mitzvot. So that was in the Netziv, in the Meshiv Dover. So the Netziv talks about this. And the case was where the buyer came to the conclusion, he had a dream of something where he was informed that the person whose schar olam haba he was acquiring wasn't so eisgehalten after all. So he wanted to get the half of the price that he paid back. He didn't want to pay the other half. So the Netziv has a long discussion in which he says that it doesn't really work. It's like if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is enlisting somebody to be a general because of their military prowess to sit in their cabinet. So that person can't sell that right to somebody else. The other person doesn't have the same prowess, doesn't have the same standing. And he says that it's a giant bizayon. And he talks about also that this is akin to the sale of the Bechorah by Esav. That says, Vayivaz Esav Esav Bechorah, that to sell your Olam Haba. He says that that's something which is a tremendous bizayon for somebody to do in the first place altogether. He says, it seems like that sale was actually a good sale. So he said, that was Kodem Matan Tovah. Kodem Matan Tovah, you can sell a Dovah Shlo Bal Yolam. He says, otherwise, it's a Dovah Shlo Bal Yolam. You can't sell it. And it's also a Kinyan Dvarim. Kinyan Dvarim, it's an Ein Bo Mamish. It's not something tangible that you could sell. So then it's thought that it's also a batal and a batal.
Now, I guess that would be the case, mikan ulaba, and also backwards, meaning buying somebody's schar in Olam Haba that they've already built up for the past. I want to go and buy Rav Chaim Kanievsky's schar in Olam Haba, well, at least a fraction of it, maybe, for a huge amount of money. You know, whatever it may be, would it be the same at Davar Shalobah Olam going on a forward basis, or would it be the same for the past as well.
I don't think that it really distinguishes when you're talking about the Schar of Olam Haba. The Rav Shlomo Kluger seems to draw a potential distinction between Mikano LeHaba and LeMafreya. So Mikano LeHaba, you can say that it's possible to enter into a Yisachar Zvulun type of partnership. Smach Zvulun and Seisecha V'Yisachar B'Yohalecha. The Ramah in Yoredeya codifies at the beginning of Hilchas Talmud Torah that it's possible for a Yisvulun type person, a businessman, to fund the learning of a Yisachar type person, and they'll be Achloku. They will split the skar of the learning of a Yisachar. So it sounds like they can actually split the skar that Yisachar is going to earn. But that's not the Mefarshim explain. That's not really the Rav Asher Weiss talks about this and others. It's not they're acquiring, Yisvulin is acquiring Yisachar's Olam Haba. Yisvulin is acquiring his own Olam Haba because of the fact that he's participating in the learning of Yisachar. So this learning is also Nikrei Sal Shemo. It's also considered to be his learning because he's enabling this learning. But Moshe Feinstein is a very long tshuva in Chelek Dalet of Yoredei and the Igros Moshe, in which he says that Zebulun gets a sechar for whatever learning would not have been able to take place if not for his contribution. He doesn't get a share in whatever learning would have taken place anyway on the part of Zebulun. That belongs completely to Zebulun. But whatever amount of learning that now is only able to happen because he's helping to finance Yisachar's learning. So he definitely has a sechar in that. He's enabling that. He has a sechar. There's a tshuva by Rav Haigon, which is quoted by the Maram Al-Shikar, where Rav Haigon says that the skar is a skar al-pi'ulaso, that it's not necessarily a skar Talmud Torah. That's a question. Rav Moshe seems to assume that there's even a skar Talmud Torah that Zvulun gets out of it, but it could be that the skar that Zvulun is getting, that the businessman is getting, is that he's getting the skar, that he enabled the learning. That's a giant suchus to be able to enable the learning, but it may not be exactly on the same level. That's up to a Kodesh Baruch Hu to determine whether it's exactly on the same level or not as the scar of the learning of Yisachar. There's a famous essay that was written by Rav Meir Auerbach in his sefer, the Imre Bina. He has a section of Shailos Uchuvos in which he distinguishes between two different scarim, two different types of reward that a person can receive for a mitzvah. There's the schar seguli and there's the schar gemuli. There's the schar seguli of what a mitzvah does to a person, what a learning Torah, it does something to an individual's neshama. Only the person who's actually doing the learning has this effect, this edifying effect on their neshama. Then there's the sechar gemuli. Then there's the actual salary that the person earns because of the fact that they're learning the Torah. So he says it's possible when you speak about a shutvas yisachar zvulin. So, and this is also, of course, only mikano lahaba, but that if there's any kind of a partnership, that would be only with respect to the sechar gemuli, with respect to whatever is the salary that a person earns mina shemayim. But the sechar seguli, that's not something which could be sold at all. It's a very beautiful essay. I remember learning that essay during a Pirkei Avos year that was given by when I lived in Munsi. I was growing up in Munsi by the late Rabbi Abraham Pessens, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha. So I was always very, very fond of that essay. I remember he spent a lot of time going through.
Very nice. So if we're saying effectively, it's not effective, the sale of buying and selling, would we say the same thing buying a chelek in Olam Haba and also buying schar mitzvahs? Is there any reason to distinguish between those, or effectively Olam Haba is Sar Mitzvah, so effectively it's the same thing. If it's not going to be a valid sale for one, it's not going to be a valid sale for the other.
You could talk about whether you can sell the right to perform a mitzvah. So that's a discussion in the Shilte Giborim. The Shilte Giborim speaks about that in Maseches Chulin. He says in Maseches Baba Kama, he speaks about this, you can potentially sell the right to perform a mitzvah, because we see that if somebody, for example, shechted an animal, shechted a chaya, or an oaf, or a bird, and they have to do the mitzvah of Kisoy Hadam, and somebody else rushes and does the mitzvah of Kisoy Hadam, takes it away from them, so Amman Gamliel required a person to pay a Sarah Zahubim. So the Shilte Gibarim says, we see from here that it's possible to sell a mitzvah. A nafka mina might be that if you sold the right to perform a mitzvah that was in your hands and you sold it to somebody else and somebody else jumped and did the mitzvah instead, so maybe that person would owe asara zehuvim to the individual who had acquired the mitzvah. But there's a ramah that indicates with respect to Hilchos Bris Mila, I think in Simen Reisha Samech Dalet in Yoredeya, The Ramah seems to paskin like the Rosh, who disagrees with that sheet of the Shelter Gibarim and says that you can't sell the right to a mitzvah to somebody else. If you gave a sechus, let's say a father gave a sechus to somebody else to perform a bris milah, and somebody else jumped in and did the bris milah, then there wouldn't be the right to any damages. That it's not something which is nisbas bikinyan, according to the sheet of the Ramah. So it seems like we don't paskin like that's something that could really be sold, even if it was the right to perform a mitzvah.
And that's the doing of the mitzvah. We're now talking about the schar of the doing of the mitzvah.
Yeah, the schar of the doing of the mitzvah, right? You give a sort of an objective amount of what the doing of the mitzvah is worth, 10 zehuvim. So that's where this discussion surrounds. But the Shulchan Aruch also says in Choshen Mishpat that we paskin like Rabbeinu Tam, that it's not enforceable bizman hazeh anyway, because it's not considered to be a taking away of actual mammon when you're just doing somebody else's mitzvah. So even the din of Rabbi Gamliel, we wouldn't enforce bizman hazeh.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody came to Beis Din bottom line and wanted to bring a case like this, what would you tell them?
So we had a case. We had a case that was brought to my attention of an individual who had paid a lot of money to a particular yeshiva in return for the Olam Haba, the Skar Olam Haba of one of the rabbis. And he wanted a declaratory judgment from the Beis Din that this sale was valid. And I was asked whether this was a type of case that was in the Beis Din's jurisdiction. So I gave a very short tshuva. I never heard anything afterwards. So I guess that whatever I said was probably the last word on the subject. I wrote, Ein lanu esek b'nistoros. I think that's our general attitude about these things. The kivshei derachmano are beyond our hasaga.
Very good, Rabbi Reis. That is a good way to conclude the discussion. As Ein lanu esek b'nistoros, we'll leave it up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu how he wants to handle the schar, the sales, the purchases of mitzvahs, schar and mitzvahs, and in olam haba.
Absolutely. You know, we have to remember that the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, "Hakol afi rov ha-maaseh." Every single person has to take responsibility for their own actions, always to try to do the right thing and to develop their own special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to earn the rewards for their ma'asim tov.
Rabbi Reis, thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Likewise. Okay. It's a pleasure to be on it. Thank you.
Thank you.